Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:06 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is June 20th. I thought we'd kick off with gold. It's down about $13 and closing reasonably close to the low of the day. It hasn't quite broken down from this range, but it's certainly not following through on the bounce that we had four sessions ago. So it does imply that there is the potential here that we could have some lower to lateral trading, potentially coming back down and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And then I think it's also important to just weigh that against the performance of silver. And silver prices were down almost a dollar. That's a big dynamic move, and it does suggest that, or it lends credence to the view that there's potential for lower to lateral trading in the precious metals. Now, of course, when we zoom out a little and look at these over the longer term, then we've definitely had a good size rebound in silver prices. And the succession of higher reaction lows remains intact, but that's a big downward dynamic. So we may be in for more volatility. It does beg the question, why? Why have we seen this weakness in the gold price? And I think it has to do with real interest rates. So if we look at this chart, we can see that the real interest rate has been falling for really quite a long time, and now it's pretty much close to zero. And when we move into positive real interest rate environments, well, then that's not generally positive for gold, because the primary rationale for a gold or precious metal bull market is that in a negative real interest rate environment, something with no yield will improve in value. Whereas if you have positive real rates, then that removes one of the tailwinds for gold. And then we also have the dollar. And the dollar was a little steadier in here today, certainly not in a dynamic manner, and definitely not in a, in dynamic enough of a manner to have that kind of an influence on silver. So I do think it is more likely that it is to do with the potential for positive real rates. Of course, what that also implies is that it is very likely that central banks are going to overshoot, raise rates too far, and then subsequently they'll have to backtrack. So despite the potential for shorter term volatility, I think there is still medium term scope for a clear upward break in the gold price. And then the corollary, of course, is that that would be a dip buying opportunity for gold and silver and also the gold miners. Now, the gold miners ETF is back in the region of the $30 range. So then this would be an area of potential support, considering it was the upper side of the underlying base formation. And it does have some work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So this, I think, also contrasts really quite profoundly with the big move that we've had in Bitcoin today. So it's up over $1,100, and it has now, I think, broken the trend that's been downwards since the peak in April. So this is really quite a meaningful move. What's happening in the crypto exchange market just stinks of cronyism. And the Coinbase and Binance have been sued by the SEC. Binance is alleging that Gary Gensler offered himself as a consultant to Binance. And that is, if it's true, or if it's proven to be true, really that is an example of rent-seeking behavior from a regulator, which really should be punished. But we'll see what happens. And then on top of all that, we have companies like Blackstone and Fidelity getting together and starting their own crypto exchange, even though companies like Coinbase and Binance were accused of running an unregulated and certainly a non-permissioned Bitcoin exchange, then its big institutional investors think that they can get around the regulation or find a kind of regulation for themselves. But the most important point is that what it is definitely evidence of is much greater institutional interest within the sector, and that is what's helping Bitcoin to advance. Not specifically at the moment, at least, about limited supply arguments or the future of the crypto market and the fintech sector. Much more, I think, to do with just the potential for institutional flows. And what that is also then helping to do is to support the outlook for some of these crypto miners. So Riot Platforms is now bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it does have first step above the base characteristics. And we've seen plenty of examples in the past where it has really done spectacularly well for brief periods of time, that should be added, during the mania phases of Bitcoin. And of course, we are less than a year out from the halving. It's supposed to be in April of next year. And if the longer term cycle holds true, then we should anticipate that there will be a good sized rebound ahead of it. We could get some volatility heading directly into the halving, and then subsequently we get these big jumps in the Bitcoin price, and they have historically coincided with times when there's a great increase in monetary and fiscal stimulus. It's either and or in that case. Now let's also just think about what's happening in the wider stock market. Well, at the S&P 500 was below that psychological 4,400 point level for most of the day, but then closed at, or it's at least approaching the close here, just a shade below it. And we've certainly seen a lot of interest in artificial intelligence, but we're also now starting to see more shares improving on their performance. Now, when we think about the PE on the S&P, it is rather aggressive, and there is into an environment where interest rates continue to rise that isn't exactly conducive to continued upside. But in a bubbly environment, and this is increasingly looking like a bubbly environment, then the markets can stay irrational longer than one can stay liquid. And that, I think, is going to be a relevant consideration. So then I think I saw another interesting chart in here today, which probably gives some intelligence into the what's happening with Tesla. So it's anticipated here that the export of finished autos out of China is ramping higher. So Tesla has embarked upon a price war. And they have really cut the price of their vehicles to the bone, and they're now much more attractive in a price comparison. And that, of course, is going to make them competitive with domestic production, but also with imports. So the share continues to advance here, and that is very much on the assumption that they're going to sell more vehicles. Of course, not every company is going to be able to keep up with that pace, but BYD is still holding on, and it moved to a new recovery high last week. It's a bit softer in here this week. Now, we saw in China today that they cut interest rates, and the market was in negative territory. So I think investors were hoping for more. And the H share index is right now in the region of the 200-day moving average and struggling to break upwards. And then also the banking sector was in negative territory. So this isn't really confidence inducing, and it suggests that the central government in China hasn't yet pulled the big guns out. They certainly aren't in a hurry to provide a lot of stimulus. They're worried about the property market bubble reflating. But at the same time, they can't very well allow the economy to contract or to drift for very much longer either, or they're going to end up with some really quite intractable types of problems. And 20% unemployment in the youth sector and for college graduates is already a significant problem. I think it is just worth considering that, or just contrasting the performance of the stock markets between China and India. So the Indian market was in positive territory today. It is still hovering here, right in the upper regions of this range that's been forming for the last 18 months. But an Indian airline has made the biggest order in history for new aircraft. And that is an incredible vote of confidence in the purchasing power of the Indian consumer, for one thing, and then the growth in demand for travel as well. So that's a major milestone in terms of the rise of the middle class in India. But I think it's also something that will reflect greater economic potential when people have greater flexibility to travel around the country and then also to travel internationally. But then there is the additional, I think perhaps even more important point that you don't exactly buy a country. What you're buying is a stock market. And how those stocks perform is a function of governance. Now, it's both a function of governance within the companies themselves and then also within the country. Because if you're an investor in a stock, it really does help if they have respect for minority shareholder interests. It's also very beneficial if there's an independent judiciary, so that if you're robbed of your shareholding, you have somewhere to go with it, to somewhere to complain. And then it's very nice if you have an independent, or you have a free press, so that some of the more egregious actions of the politicians can, in fact, find some can be viewed and debated in public. Well, you just don't have that in China. What you do have is a very large market, which has encouraged people to invest in it, and it's encouraged companies to build factories. But from a stock market perspective, it's a lot harder to make money in the Chinese market than it is the Indian market. Now, then the rupee was in mildly negative territory in here today, so has not quite yet broken through the 200-day moving average, where we have obviously seen a lot of strength in the currency markets is in Latin America, and the Brazilian real was also a little softer in here today, and the big question for everyone is, since Brazil was the first country to really aggressively raise interest rates and then has held them high for a prolonged period, will they then also be among the first countries to cut those interest rates? And when they do that, isn't it likely then that it's going to enhance consumer demand? Because consumers in Brazil have really been under pressure. Now, I think in the fintech sector, you have StoneCo, which is a cloud company that enacts transactions, and the share also has first step above the base characteristics. So it could easily be one of the beneficiaries of lower interest rates starting to come through. Then, going back to think about the airlines, Rolls-Royce, it has defense and it has civil aviation parts to the business, but then they also have a big service business. And that was the reason that I bought it originally in 2020, was because of I was hoping that the rebound in airlines would be quicker. Well, it was not quicker. It took an extra couple of years. But the share does now have first step above the base characteristics, and it was in positive territory in here today. And then Airbus has been grinding higher and is now coming back into the region of its peaks. I think that contrasts really quite acutely with the underperformance that we're seeing in Boeing. I think that is much more to do with the defense portion of its business rather than the commercial, because the US government and certainly a number of politicians are a bit leery about continuing to fund the war effort in Ukraine. And we're increasingly getting up to the point where people are not willing to give unlimited support, or at least there's debate about it. And that's not great for some of the defense companies. Now, I don't think at the same time, I don't believe that they're in any way going to abandon Ukraine. They're certainly not going to tolerate an advance of Russia all the way to the border of the EU. But it's going to be a, I think, a debatable topic. Now, when we think then about paying for all of that, well, 10-year yields were a little bit tighter in here today, and down about 4 basis points. And we haven't seen much movement over the last month, but there is a downward bias. And when we flip that around and look at the TLT ETF, well, it is bouncing from the 100 level, and it has unwound its overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. I remain long because I think that it is more likely than not it is going to unwind the oversold condition relative to the 1,000-day moving average. I've been underwater on this position for a while, but I'm still willing to continue to hold it because I do think that it is likely that the Fed is going to overshoot. And when they do, they'll have to cut interest rates and potentially quickly, and then that will create demand for bonds. And then let's also just continue to pay attention to what's happening in the oil price. We have an exceptionally inert environment, and prices don't do this indefinitely. When the breakout comes, it's going to be emphatic. And ranges mean that supply and demand are back in balance. We will have a bullish catalyst. Breakouts encourage new sources of demand on the upside, supply on the downside, and it is likely when the breakout comes, it is going to be very powerful. And the energy ETF continues to hover here. It's still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. But there's been a marked loss of momentum over the last 12 months. That was a huge downward dynamic in the middle of 2022. We've had this period of right-hand extension subsequently. And of course, we are still in the region of those peaks from all the way back in 2014. And that is also in the region of the peak from back in 2008. And the more back history we look at, the more this looks like a top formation. So I still think that the most likely trajectory for energy prices is downwards. And I'm still very much of the view that the most likely scenario that we have for inflation is for a deflationary shock, that quantitative tightening contributes to deflationary pressures. Every time it's been tried in the past, there has been a deflationary shock. And inflationary pressures are moderating. Now, they are not coming down nearly as quickly as anybody wants. But I think it is more likely than not that they will overshoot on the downside. Now, I know that's non-consensus, and I know that certainly when people think about what is likely, there's been a fear that inflation, or that predictions for inflation to come down, have been wide of the mark. But that doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means that the timing is not quite accurate. And of course, in the markets, timing, if you're too early, you might as well be wrong. But considering where rates are right now and the decline that we've already seen in bond prices, I think that the more likely scenario, or the non-consensus conclusion relative to where prices are, is something that has the potential to offer a return over the medium term. But then, when I did mention earlier that we have more companies that are completing base formations and breaking their downtrends, Delta Airlines, excuse me, this is Danaus, I do apologize. And that's container ships. So that really is a mistake on my part. I should have typed in DAL. Container ships beginning to turn around is also beneficial. Delta Airlines breaking out is certainly indicative of more demand for air travel. And let's then just make sure that we keep an eye on those containers. So the price of container ships, our 40-foot containers, surged in 2021. That is still coming downwards. And then we should also pay attention to what's happening for the major oil tanker companies. I saw data today talking about a significant number of Greek tankers are still transporting Russian oil, and they've so far avoided sanctions. But Ardmore Shipping, for example, had done spectacularly well in 2022. Now it's back trading below the 200-day moving average, and it's still coming downwards. So what that's suggesting is that we might see better performance from individual companies within the sector, but not all shipping companies are going to do well because we're still in an uncertain economic environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.